840 AM 930 WEOL. Which would have been Michael Jackson's 60th birthday, and can't think of a better song to at least lead into our next guest when we think of things out in the woods or things we can't explain. It's the Rabbit Hole Experience on Sasquatches, Spirits, and the People Who See Them. Paul Conroy joins us this morning. He is a investigator. He conducts investigations for the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization. Paul, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this, the Rabbit Hole Experience. Some people think you're going to go down the rabbit hole, obviously reference to Alice in Wonderland. You're never sure where you're going to end up or what's going to happen. How does that apply to encounters or sightings for Bigfoot or other sort of paranormal activity?
Well, we define the term within the context of the book is when someone has one of these experiences, whether it's someone out in the woods and they suddenly come across a creature that fits the Sasquatch description, or a ghost. My co-author, Michael Robarts, he researches paranormal activity as it relates to ghosts and spirits. And we found by interviewing so many of these people that it causes a very abrupt change in their perception. It's a life-altering experience, sometimes positive and sometimes negative.
So in a sense, for this book, you're looking at not only their experience and that, but actually what it is and how they respond. Because regardless of whether what they encounter or see, if it happens, it is something to them, it is their own experience, they do have real reactions to it. Are there a lot of similarities, or what have you discovered in that regard?
Yeah, it was a lot of the reactions are pretty diverse. For example, one I interviewed at the time, he was a young man in 2005, and he was out preparing for deer season. He was checking out his tree stand and encountered this creature that, again, fit the description of Sasquatch. And I took his report, took his details, and then as we were preparing for the book some 12 years later, I came across him on social media, interviewed him again, and we talked about, I guess, that time frame in between and how it impacted him and his life and his perception of things. And for him, it was a pretty positive experience, and we find for some people, I think there is the concept of there still being some discoveries out there to be made, you know, that there's still some wonder and some mystery out there in the world. And overall, he liked it. He views it as a positive thing moving forward. I interviewed another woman who was 30 years removed from her experience, and she was having some car trouble on the side of the road and came face-to-face with this big, giant, hairy creature. And 30 years later, I could still hear the terror in her voice as she described it. So there's a real broad kind of interpretation of these types of experiences, and we found that they affect people's concepts of reality in general. In other words, they don't have this experience and have this initial fear response and then go about their business. It has a lasting impact, and it affects how they perceive everything moving forward. And some people actually begin to call into question, what's real and what's not real. They are forced to redraw that line between what they consider to be real and unreal.
Do some people feel as though they're, sort of special, or at least I'm in a small group of people that have had this encounter, or have been fortunate, or I don't know, maybe as you say, maybe unfortunate to have gone through this?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Some people feel very privileged and better for the experience. You know, they feel lucky to have experienced it, whether somebody experiencing a creature that has yet to be cataloged to be discovered, or some people it might be an experience with maybe what seems to be a ghost of a loved one, long since deceased, and yeah, it's a spiritual experience. It's kind of life affirming, and of course, you know, we've also talked to people whose lives will never be the same as a result of the very abrupt and often violent shift in the psyche as they're forced to kind of accommodate this new reality, something that either A, they had never believed before, or B, maybe just never really considered.
We're talking today with Michael Conroy. The book is called The Rabbit Hole Experience on Sasquatches, spirits, and the people who see them. What kind of personal experience could you share related to this?
Well, I tell people, people assume that I've had, face-to-face encounters, and I've never seen a Sasquatch. I've had some really interesting experiences out in the field, but I need more. And what I tell people is I believe in the possibility. I think enough evidence exists that warrants further investigation, further research. And I always find it interesting when I consider the fact that, you know, we're willing to convict people of crimes based on fingerprints and video and eyewitness testimony. And in a court of law, those are considered to be pieces of evidence where we can convict or acquit people. All three of those pieces of evidence exist to support the existence of Sasquatch. Yet, you know, for the most part, people remain indifferent.
Is it a matter of we don't really want to know? I mean, sometimes you think.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question and something I wonder myself. As far as the general public goes, I think it could be a combination of not wanting to know, and also I think we've maybe become a bit. I don't know, maybe cocky is the right word, as far as all this technology that we have in the 21st century and all the things we're capable of doing. I think there's a collective feeling a bit that there's just no way that something could exist under our noses like that. But it happens all the time. You know, the giant squid was considered to be a myth up until we had to acknowledge the fact that the giant squid exists. So I think some people, just from the comfort of their living rooms, just assume that there's no possible way something like this could exist without us knowing about it, combined with the fact that, as you suggested, I think for some people, it better not exist. And I think there's a combination of reasons for that. I think some of it has to do with our own origins and the fact that we don't like to maybe consider, you know, where we come from historically. And I can't help but wonder, I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I can't help but wonder, as far as the scientific community goes, I wonder if maybe part of it is just the fact that, you know, whenever discoveries are made, it forces us to kind of rewrite the books, so to speak. And I wonder if it's just a matter of that coming into play, you know, is if there's a large part of the scientific community, of course, turns up their nose at the concept of Sasquatch. And I wonder if maybe some of them figure that, you know, it's kind of too late to turn back now. And maybe there's some concern about looking foolish if it turns out to be true and the existence is confirmed.
Don't know if this will happen in our lifetime. How long have we been in search of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, a creature? I mean, how you through your research, or at least probably in your knowledge of this, when did man first start thinking, what is it that's out there and why can't I, you know, I saw this thing, but now I don't know where it is, that type of thing.
I mean, it's the legends date back to Native Americans far before Europeans, you know, came over. You know, when Champlain was exploring the region, he encountered Native Americans telling him of their accounts of giant hairy men. It goes back as far back as we can go back, you know, documented history. And it's not just limited to the United States or North America. You know, that there's the Yowie in Australia. Rural China has reports. Russia. So it's really kind of a, you know, you could say almost a worldwide phenomena. And I for me, as I said, although I've never seen them, I want more evidence. Based on what I have seen in the eyewitnesses that I've spoken to, what I can say is it would be far more unlikely, in my opinion, that this is all just happenstance or a collective delusion or victims of hoax. That seems a lot more unlikely than you know, there being some validity to it.
Tell us about the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization and also how long you have sort of had this interest in this phenomenon.
Yeah, they're just kind of a loose-knit organization of researchers and investigators. Take reports. I think a big part of people who have these experiences, whether they be Sasquatch or like my co-author deals with ghosts and spirit activity, is regardless of the debate over whether these things are real, the experiences are real to people and they have a very lasting impact. And I think it's important for people to be able to share those experiences without, you know, fear of ridicule. And I think that's a big part of what we do, is not only to investigate the existence of, but also just give people an opportunity to talk about what happened to them, for therapeutic value. You know, and I don't claim to be a psychologist or a counselor, but I know for a lot of the people I've spoken to who are genuinely frightened, it makes them feel better to just talk about it. I think that's an important and overlooked aspect of what we do.
How did you find all of these people? Do they come forward? Do you hear an inkling of them and then go bring them out? Because many of them probably aren't interested in telling this story for maybe obvious reasons. But how did you get them?
Well, mainly the BFRO website, BFRO.net. People can file out reports and tell of their experiences, and an investigator will contact them, and if they wish, they can have a phone conversation and get some details and that sort of thing. And a lot of it is also word of mouth. It's amazing to me how I can meet somebody and we can discuss their experience, and then from that point of contact, that person will know somebody, and then they have a brother whose friend is, and it's really quite a domino effect. And then you'll be looking at this area on a particular map and realize from the one person you spoke to that you're now looking at eight different people who have had these experiences.
Ohio is somewhat of a hot spot as well, and there's organizations in the, you know, Ohio that relate to this. Where's the good regions for Bigfoot? We're looking for forestation, right? Forest areas, a lot of remote, I guess, is the best way to put it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, wilderness areas. Ohio is certainly an area that that has always seemed to have a lot of activity. Northern California, Washington State, Oregon, and then on the eastern side, Florida, for sure. Northern New York, along the Vermont border. As a matter of fact, there was an incident in that area just within the last 2 weeks that caused quite a stir, in an area of Whitehall, New York, which is a pretty rich history. Oklahoma, you know, Canada, of course, remote areas of Canada. So, we get reports from all over, but there does definitely seem to be some concentrated areas where they're a lot more consistent.
And when we think of Bigfoot or Sasquatch, we're talking about a species, not like some long-living creatures, or do we know? I mean, I guess we wouldn't know how long they could live, but based on science, we're thinking, where would they be? There must be young ones. There must be ones that have died. How come all this evidence, we don't end up seeing, like, baby Sasquatches, as it were, or things like that?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is that people do, and you're right. I think your question speaks to kind of a concept that collectively we've kind of built over the decades that these reports have coming out is when the topic is discussed generally in the public, you know, it's always he, they're always 9 feet tall. And it's often even discussed if there's a period of time, like a few days, where a lot of sightings are documented or reported, it's often talked about as if it's one creature, you know. So it's we've kind of attached this mythical, you know, almost folkloric kind of concept to it, you know, where, you know, maybe it disappears and reappears, and you know, there's all sorts of theories, and I try to stay open about them. But you're exactly right. There are old ones and young ones, and males and females, et cetera, et cetera. We get some reports that suggest that under the umbrella of Sasquatch, there are different types, there are different colors. While most are described as very broad-shouldered and large, I've heard about some reports, I've never took any myself, but that describe a much different creature as very lanky and thin. So I think when we talk about the image discussed in the media, it's a bit generalized, and you know, that happens over time. But actually, the reports are really diverse. You know, brown creatures, black creatures, white creatures, you know, gray, you know, different sizes. The one case study I referred to previously about the young man checking his tree stand, the creature was only 4.5-5 feet tall. So a lot of different theories out there about, you know, where and how they originate from, and some people attach them to UFOs. Try to keep an open mind, but I think it's a bit, you know, it's a bit more straightforward than that. And, you know, I think basically it's just an undiscovered animal, you know, and there are different debates as far as, you know, how are they closer to us? Are they a bit more human? Are they a bit more ape? They're somewhere in between. You know, fun discussion to have, but of course, in order to make any hardcore declarations, you know, we would need, you know, a subject to study. So until then, I guess the discussions are just going to continue.
Right. Well, anything with the unknown, there's always a debate, and you never know who has the right answer. But it's a fascinating book, The Rabbit Hole Experience on Sasquatches, Spirits, and the People Who See Them. Our guest this morning is Paul Conroy. You can get the book as well as see what they're up to at BFRO.net, the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization. Paul, we appreciate your time this morning, and thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
Thanks.